All right. Let me, I've had several ask me about the coffee house ministry and this kind of thing. I want to get to that second, and I will finish today's hours talking about ministries to reach the counterculture, suggested ministries, and I'll ask you to share with me some ideas that you've had, and maybe we can share them with the whole group, because I don't have the final answer on any of this material. But first of all, let me, I want to zero in on a particular ministry that I think the church has really neglected, and that's the ministry to the homosexual community. And I want to talk about some things that I've learned in dealing with the homosexual problem. And there is an absolute epidemic of the gay lifestyle all over the world. And it is as rampant here on the West Coast as any place in the world, as far as I'm concerned. And San Francisco has long been known as a gay town, the place to go for a gay lifestyle. And I guess second only to that is Los Angeles. And I took Dr. Newport and a couple others down on Hollywood Boulevard the other night to the corner of Las Palmas and Hollywood. And one block away is a large, large Baptist church that seats 1,200 people. And the homosexuals meet on the doorsteps at night of that church. That's where they make their contacts. And that church is... fear and trepidation has turned its back on that ministry. And they're not ministering to the community that's right there at their doorsteps. And I sympathize with them to the extent that this is probably the most difficult ministry that the church can undertake. And yet I think we need to look at it because of the fact that it is on the increase. It's coming out into the open as well as being on the increase. Now I want to just back up and give you a little history of my own knowledge of this problem. I have been a youth evangelist ever since I was 16 years old. And I can remember, and maybe just because I'm beautiful, I don't know, but all through my ministry, I have had guys come to talk to me about this problem. I don't know whether they were on the make or whether they really wanted help. I assume the former and partially the latter. But I can remember as a teenage evangelist, the first time a young man about the ninth grade in school, and here I was just in high school, came and told me that he had a homosexual problem. I can remember how absolutely shocked I was, because he was the minister of music's son in the church. And just to briefly share with you, all through my ministry, repeatedly, I have had young people coming to me that were in our churches. And I was the first person that they had ever told this problem to. And I've always asked them why they haven't shared it with a youth leader, with pastors. And the typical reply is they would not understand. They're not equipped to deal with it. The fear of being exposed. And all of these fears are there. And I'm just going to make a statement to you based upon my knowledge as I've seen around the country. My guess is that this problem has infiltrated your church. It is in your church. It's in most churches around the country. It's there incognito, in that these people just have this problem. They don't know what to do with it. They don't even know what it is, many of them. They don't know what it is, what's wrong with them, how to deal with it, why they are homosexual, why they are gay. And what I have found since I came to the West Coast is that many... lesbians and homosexuals, your boy pal's right out there. Did you know he's out there? Oh, you do? He can come in here and sit if he wants to. You don't want him to sit in on this? Well, where should he be? Because he's right there at the door. That's right. Okay. There he goes, Mom. Where was I? All right, upon coming to the West Coast, here's what I've discovered in talking with so many people. I have met I don't know how many guys and gals that left the Bible Belt or left the Midwest or somewhere, or that grew up in evangelical lifestyles, evangelical churches, became aware that they had tendencies, did not know how to deal with them, how to cope with them, and so they split and left home to find out, as they said it, if they were gay. And they come and get involved in a city that is openly permissive, that gives them an opportunity to experiment. And many of them have wrecked and broken their lives as they've given in to a latent homosexual problem. And then once they got here and have come to me for counseling or to others for counseling, by this time they have been committed, but they have not liked. So we're going to raise a couple of questions. Can a Christian be a homosexual? Can a Christian be a lesbian? And how do we deal with this kind of a problem? Because I really believe it's much on the increase, and more so gay power is demonstrating itself as being normal rather than abnormal, as being natural rather than a deviant. We here in Los Angeles have a church that on any given Sunday has 500 to 700 homosexuals in a worship experience. The pastor is a former Pentecostal who was caught in a child molestation case and was kicked out of his denomination. Rather than repent of it and deal with it and seek therapy, he has rationalized it away. He teaches that Jesus was a homosexual, that all 12 of his disciples were gay, and thus and so. And this is the rationalistic approach that they've taken to this kind of thing. And I confess to you that many of the young men and women that have come across my ministry while I was pastoring in Hollywood near Sunset Strip, when they heard my strongly conservative evangelical view of this problem, when I approached it biblically, the way the Apostle Paul and the Old Testament scriptures do, rather than repent, they left and went down to the homosexual church and became apostate and reprobate because of their unwillingness to change. So let's begin. What is homosexuality? And then I'm going to move into a very bizarre area in a moment. We're going to talk about transsexuals, these people like, I'm blank right now, Christine Jorgensen, who have changed sexes. We'll talk about this problem in a moment. All right, what is homosexuality? Is it an illness or is it a sin? Is it demonic or is it all three? Now, I think for the longest time, the church had it in one category only, and that was that it was a sin problem. I think this has been a historical perspective. The trend now is toward understanding it as a form of illness, a sociological distortion based upon family lifestyles and other influences. The tendency now is to see it primarily as an illness in the minds of many, many people. I'd say liberal theologians. The view that many conservative theologians have is that it is a sin, but it's also taboo, and we don't want to mess with it. That's the attitude that many people have had, and I think part of this attitude of not wanting to deal with a homosexual problem is not knowing how to deal with it, and secondly, the frustration of being defeated with it so often. You know, when you strike out, every time you come up to the plate, before long you quit playing ball, and you take up tiddlywinks. And I know many ministers that have just been so frustrated that they've had such a low or such a high mortality rate and such a low success ratio that they've just thrown their hands up. Now, I have read books by leading youth workers like Dave Wilkerson and many, many others who have had both success and failure, but I've also read statements to the fact that a committed, overt homosexual cannot be helped, and they are to be committed to the devil. I've read such extreme statements as that. All right, let's talk about what it is. Well, I think it can be in all three categories. In fact, we quite would agree that a homosexual is ill. He definitely has some emotional problems. He is ill. And there's a sense in which it needs to be dealt with through therapy as an illness. Secondly, it is a sin problem. I used to question why in Romans chapter 1, when Paul begins in verse 20 and dealing with the fall of man, why he climaxes this section with an illustration of homosexuality, where man worshipped the creation rather than the creator, thinking himself wise, he became a fool, and why he began to worship created things and thus and so. I used to wonder why Paul, when he was looking at an illustration of human depravity, that he picked the homosexual mentality. And I don't think I understood that until I began to really get involved in trying to help these people. And I have come to a conclusion that most psychiatrists who have dealt with this problem have come to. If you'll read the book The Overt Homosexual, which is a classic, by the way, The Overt Homosexual. And I do not know the author's name because I've had that book on my shelf a half a dozen times, and my gay friends keep stealing it. And that's the God's truth. I cannot keep that book in my library. I keep loaning it out to somebody, and they never bring it back. And the book is almost pornographic to an overt homosexual because it has case history after case history after case history. But this author, and you can pick it up at Pickwick Bookstore, they know about it. It is a classic sociological clinical study, The Overt Homosexual. This author, who is an authority in the field, says that the homosexual mentality is the most self-centered mentality that we know anything about. That the one motivating force that motivates the homosexual is selfishness. He is totally and thoroughly self-centered. Everything he does revolves around himself. Homosexuals talk about loving one another, about being in love. Now, without getting into all of this, it is absolutely impossible for a homosexual to love his lover, because he uses his lover. He abuses his lover. In fact, these case histories will show you that over and over again, in an overt homosexual relationship, what they are doing is striking out. Even in an intercourse relationship, they're striking out at a parent. They're striking out at something, and it's actually an abusive thing, and that's why these relationships constantly tear down one's psyche and tear down oneself. And Paul in Romans 1, I think, used this as an illustration of the leadership of the Holy Spirit, because man without God, as far away as he can get, totally self-centered, totally void of theistic concept, is the homosexual mentality. It is man totally wrapped up in himself, totally devoid of the standards, the authority, the character of God. He has set up his own rules and his own standard and is committed to this kind of a lifestyle. And so definitely it is the most difficult sin problem in human nature. It is the most difficult to deal with because it really is at the end of the pendulum swing away from God. It is man estranged from God. And it is a sin problem. Of course, it's an illness, isn't it? But it is a sin problem. It is a rebellion. Now, you're not to let a homosexual tell you that he just has to be a homosexual because his mother and daddy made him gay and that it wasn't his fault. I don't know how many times I've had the gay crowd tell me, I didn't ask to be born the way I am, as though it were genetics alone. And this is not true. This has not been proven true by physicians and sociologists and psychiatrists. It has not been proven true. A homosexual is gay because he wants to be gay. Now, he was perhaps raised in an environment that created tendencies that set him up for this kind of thing, but there came a time when he had to commit himself to the giving in to this type of problem. And then when he became committed to it, these tendencies become overt, and he becomes actively homosexual in his thinking and in his practice. And there's somewhere down the line where the redemptive power of God, if he had chosen the other way, could have dealt with him and delivered him. So it is a sin problem. It is a rebellion, as well as a sickness. Now, there's a third area that we want to talk about today, and that is much of it, when it has come to an advanced state, much of it is demonic. And I think we want to talk about the homosexual demon. Now, I did not believe in this myself a couple of years ago, and I dealt with it purely in the area of sin and illness and completely bypassed the demonic aspects of the homosexual life. And I failed in my ministry with some young men because I was not open to this area. And since then, I have seen this as being a truth also. Okay, let me just move right on then. How do you deal with a homosexual problem? If you've got a young person in your church who comes to you and tells you they think they might be homosexual or might be lesbian, and I use the homosexual term to deal with both sexes. There's really no need to make that distinction. How do you deal with it? Well, let me begin and back up one step before that. First of all, you'll have to open up to them or you'll never find them. They're not going to come to you unless you've opened yourself up and you've let it be known publicly that you can love these people in Christ rather than condemn them and ostracize them and put them over here as some kind of freak, I think you've got to say publicly and let it be known that you do not put homosexuals in a separate category from alcoholics or from any other area. This is a bondage. It is a spiritual bondage. They are not freaks of society. They come under the scope of the love of God, the redemptive work of Christ on the cross. Now, what I mean by that, if you're the kind of guy that's constantly telling jokes on fags and constantly making your little pretty remarks with your little lisp and saying, oh, he's kind of sweet, isn't he? You do that, and now you're not going to have a ministry to the homosexual, because they're not going to open themselves up to you if your attitude is that of scorn. And a church takes on a personality at this point, don't you think? I know churches that are very masculine, where in the sense that the men are very virile and athletic, and there could be a boy growing up in that church who's not ever going to open himself up if the mentality of the church is one of criticism and mocking and thus and so. I use this as an illustration because since I have done this in crusades and through my church, I have been absolutely amazed how these people have come out of the woodwork. I can go into a citywide crusade and all I have to do is tell one or two illustrations of my work with homosexuals and they're being delivered. And I promise you that before I get away from that stadium that night, somebody's going to come out of that crowd and ask to talk to me. Now, they didn't used to do that until I began to just be let it known that they could be helped and that I was sympathetic with the problem. And I think one thing that our pastors can and churches need to do is to really look at this thing. Is this an area of ministry in the counterculture? Is this part of the Great Commission? Are we commissioned to help these kind of people? Now, I share that with you because the church that I pastored in Beverly Hills, when I came there, we had 6 gay guys in the choir when I got there. In this acting fraternity of Hollywood, I mean, young men in their 20s, we had 6 of them. Now, I didn't know it when I got there. I pastored there nearly a year before I began to become aware of this. But in my conservative evangelical preaching, I just stood up. I could start preaching through Romans. That's what brought it all. I didn't get past the first chapter. And I zeroed in on this homosexual problem because I saw it all over Hollywood, and I began to zero in on it. But I did not condemn it in an isolated thing. I looked at it as a broad spectrum of man without God, and I began to let us know that we need to minister to these people. And the guys in my choir began to come to me and say, "Preacher, I didn't know how you felt about this, but I need help." And because our church, many of the young girls, by the way, the kids in our church knew the problem, and I didn't know it. The young girls that they dated, they knew that they were gay. And so consequently, I think you have to open yourself up to this. And I mean, your mentality has to be one of a redemptive attitude. Now, second, let me say this. If you're the minister to the homosexual, your church needs to be a fellowship that understands. Your church needs to be a fellowship that understands. Now, by church, we could pull out a smaller identity group out of that church. It may be a small group of 6 or 8 young people, a prayer group, a Bible study group. But I'm convinced that you're not going to help the homosexual unless he's got some Christian brothers and sisters that can pray with him, that he can talk about this thing without shame, that he can talk about his problem the way you would talk about a dating problem, the way you would talk about any other problem. Now, one of the things we found in our work is that so many young men, they have to carry this burden alone, you see, and young women. We had 2 girls who were roommates in our church who had been living together for 5 years, and they'd been gay ever since. They'd been in love ever since they were 16, and now they were in their early 20s. And they had never been able to discuss this with anybody. And all the other young women in the church had never really been able to discuss it with anyone. And we have found that beyond just talking to a pastor or a counselor, these people need Christian fellowship that does not ostracize them, but that can pray with them, because they're going to fall from time to time. Many times after they've really sought help, there's this tremendous temptation. Perhaps they slip, and Satan will come in and assault them with guilt and unworthiness. even after they're saved. And it's so helpful that if these people can come to the pastor and say, you know, I need prayer. And it got to the place in our church, and I wish to God this could happen all across the United States, where a boy would get up out of the seat and come to the prayer rail in our church. And when he knelt there, and I'd come to pray with him, he'd say, "Preacher, I blew it last week." And I could call together half a dozen guys and gals together, and we'd come around the altar and lay hands on this brother and pray with him. And then maybe that night after church, they'd go to somebody's apartment. Boy, they'd pray together, and they'd fortify this brother with their prayers. And many times in our Bible study groups and apartments, when we were sitting around sharing, it was not uncommon for a guy to say that, "I need your prayers. I'm really under pressure from the devil." And he didn't have to go into specifics. Maybe it was just temptation that he was feeling. And he says, "I'm under pressure at my job," you know, this type of thing. And so we could pray together. And I think that's extremely important. And this is part of what the New Testament church is, isn't it? Instead of being reactionary toward these people, we need to reach out. And there needs to be this kind of a community of fellowship where we really, like I said earlier, I think we tend to fear the things we don't understand. Don't you think that's true? And the church has had a reactionary attitude because we don't understand the homosexual. Therefore, we have just closed our minds to it. But they need a fellowship to understand. Thirdly, they need an elder who can help them. They need an elder who can help them. That elder may be the pastor, maybe an associate pastor, maybe a youth worker, maybe a mature Christian, but someone who has some knowledge of this problem, both scripturally and psychologically, that they can talk to. And then fourthly, Christian counseling. Christian counseling, and by that I mean a Christian psychiatrist or a Christian sociologist, professional Christian help, if you want to put it that way. Now, I am not qualified as a minister of the gospel to deal with the committed homosexual in all that he needs. And I think the elder needs to realize his limitations at this point. Here's a beautiful example where the Christian ministry can be blended, Dr. Newport, with professional psychology and psychiatry. Neither one of them, exclusive of the other, is going to get the job done. But mutually together, many times, God can work healing. Now, three things are needed. Now, let's put this together. If someone comes to you who needs help, they need three things. They need social help, spiritual help, and psychological help. And if a young man or a young woman came to me with this problem, and maybe they said, I think I might be gay, homosexual tendencies, maybe they've also actually had some overt sexual encounters, the first thing I usually do would deal with them on a spiritual level as a pastor, or on a Christian level. I would deal with this as a sin, like you would any other sin. It needs to be confessed. It needs to be renounced. It needs to be seen biblically for what it is, and many times you'll have to unlearn him, because if he's been around the homosexual crowd, they have rationalized this and justified this, and he's got all the gay defense mechanisms. You know what I mean? And you've got to break down all this in his mind and then come back to the biblical position. Now, here is your problem. And I usually share with him that you have basically yourself and the devil to blame. There came a point of temptation, and you gave in to it. And now you're at a point of bondage. And that needs to be confessed and dealt with in a spiritual cleansing and confession session. Now, the second thing I recommend after you have done that is try to involve this young man in some kind of redemptive fellowship, a small group. I'd say you have close friends. Do your friends know? Do you have any Christian friends? And if he doesn't have any, I would try to introduce this young man to some Christian, mature Christian people that he could talk to about this problem besides yourself, because quite frankly, you might not have that much time. But put him in some kind of a small group fellowship where he could just let it be known when he first gets there, "I'm gay. And I'm looking for God's deliverance, and I need help, and I want you to be my friends and to understand and work with me and seek out that kind of a thing." And boy, that's powerful, by the way, for him to come in and not have to feel like everybody's, you know, giving him this eyeball routine. But they're working with him and they're praying for him. Then the third thing, of course, is psychological therapy. I believe that the ministry of this church, through the leadership of the Holy Spirit in dealing with or leading Cal Hara and Allegra Hara, this thing of soul healing, is so beautifully biblical and relevant to this area that if ever there's anybody who needs soul healing, the homosexual does. Because deep down within his subconscious, there are attitudes toward his mother, toward his father, toward parents, that he's bitternesses, that he's repressed, that he doesn't even know are there. I'm amazed as I sit down to talk with homosexuals and get them to tell me about their lifestyle, how almost without exception they fit the classical psychological patterns. A dominant mother, a passive father, an absentee father, a dominant mother. Maybe the mother has that bitterness toward her husband and she's passed that off on a daughter, and the daughter grows up with a very anti-male attitude. Because the mother instilled those attitudes toward men in her mind and rejected a father image and thus and so. And when the girl begins to talk about this or the guy begins to talk about this and you get him to tell you the lifestyle, they're amazed that really was the factor. And these are areas that once they're brought out in the open under the leadership of a real counselor, someone who really has training in this area. Now, by the way, you may be in a town where it is very difficult to find a Christian psychiatrist. And when I use the word Christian, I mean evangelical, Bible-believing psychiatrist who knows this as a sin problem, doesn't deal with it just on Freudian terms or something to that effect. But if you can find that kind of ministry, now we're very fortunate here in our church that we have our own psychiatric staff and psychology staff, and these men are godly men, and I've had since I've been here at this church, and I've only been here full-time since January. I've had about three or four young men come to me, and I've dealt with them on the spiritual level first. I've dealt with them on the social Christian level second by introducing them to some other people, and then on this therapeutic level. And I have seen God work miraculous deliverance through real good soul healing. Now, let me say this. After they've gone to that psychiatrist, and they've brought out all of these things in their past, these distortions of attitudes toward parents and society and us and so, those things then need to be what? Prayed over and dealt with, and let the blood of Christ heal those bitter spots. And reunions need to be made with parents, and maybe the guy or the gal need to go back home and let the parents know what happened to them and thus and so, and that, Mom, I want to have a new attitude, and God's dealt my life and thus and so. And so it becomes a spiritual cleansing. And here again, this is where the pastor can come back in after they working concurrently with a Christian therapist. The pastor can be a great help, as well as these other people, in coming to understand their problem. And I think all three of these are necessary, because if the only person that homosexual is seeing is that pastor or that youth worker and that therapist, but still comes into a church where he cannot really find the milieu of Christian fellowship that he needs, he can be hurt again. Now, let me move into one more area. Now, by the way, someone's going to ask me, I'm sure, have I ever known a homosexual to be delivered? I performed a wedding for a young man in our church who was a preacher's son who left the Bible Belt, came to Hollywood. He'd always had some gay tendencies, went to a Baptist school, got kicked out of the Baptist school for alleged homosexual propositions of some boys in the dorm, came to Hollywood, supposing the guy was going to be an actor, just plunged head over heels into the gay community, became what the classical term is, a male whore. He was what we would call a whoring homosexual. Now, not all are. There are those that are looking for what you would look in a straight heterosexual relationship, a lover for life. And they're not permissive. There's the permissive homosexual, and then there's the non-permissive homosexual. He became permissive, got busted by plainclothesman in a men's restroom where he was just waiting for someone to come in, and made a pass at a plainclothesman and got arrested. And it was the greatest thing that ever happened to him, to get busted, because then he had to... Now, I had been working with him for quite some time and trying to help him, but with very little success. Finally, we had to bring his parents in, expose this to his parents, and I finally got him to agree to go see a psychiatrist, and then we prayed, and it brought him to a place of brokenness. He had been exposed and thus and so, and God has marvelously, miraculously healed this boy. He married a beautiful actress that you see on television quite frequently. And but now, even after they're married, there are some problems in terms of his being the strong male figure that he ought to be. He has a tendency to let her run the show, just like he let his mother run the show, and just like the mother ran the show over the daddy. And he has a tendency to, and he has to really pray about being the authoritative figure, and she has to back off and force him to take this, and God is still dealing. And I have known of perhaps a dozen of these boys that, to my knowledge, have been totally, totally delivered. Now, one other area, and that is the demonic. There are some young men that I had an opportunity to deal with that, because I was not as knowledgeable as I ought to have been, I believe could have been helped if I had approached it from a demonic level. And I think there's no way to really know this except to explore it. But I believe that many people who are homosexual have been demonized, and their compulsive behavior can be explained no other way. And I think the only way to know that is if a person wants help, prays to receive Christ, goes through these channels that I talked about, still cannot be delivered. There's only one other answer for it, isn't there? And that is a demonic, demonized situation. And there it must be exercised, and the person must will that it be so. And we have seen these kind of encounters. I have a preacher friend, Jack Taylor, who has written a couple of outstanding books on the spirit-filled life. His book, Victory Over the Devil, Dr. Newport cited. He came out to Hollywood to preach in our church, it's been 2.5 years ago now, and I was sharing with him some of my ministry in this area, and he said, well, have I ever dealt with a homosexual demon? And I said, maybe I have, but I didn't have the guts to pursue it on through. And he told me that only just recently he had a young man in his church that came in confessing this problem, and they got in a prayer situation and began to bind the devil in this young man's life in the name of Jesus. And the young man completely went in a trance, and a demon began to manifest itself in a very high, sweet, effeminate voice, and saying, I'm not gay, I'm not gay, I'm not going to imitate it because it's going to be on tape and everybody will laugh at me for the next 5 years, but I'm not gay, I'm not gay. And they began to command it to go out, and the demon picked the boy up and threw him through a plate glass window right there in his study, and tried to kill the boy. And before they could stop him, the kid got up off the floor and just started diving through the window. And of course, the boy was eventually delivered. And when the boy came to, he was not aware of any of this. He was just totally unconscious of what had happened. And he had actually been demonized. Now, you will find out, if you deal with the homosexual community, that Dr. Newport, more so and more so, they're getting into the occult. It's like this is a pattern. Satan just leads us more and more into this kind of thing. I think you would be shocked to know, perhaps, that in the theater arts, and I'm thinking now of television and the movie industry is, and I may get sued for slander on this, is largely dominated by homosexuals, and of course on the other extreme, Jews and Catholics own the industry, but I don't put those all in the same category. But I'm talking about producers, designers, stage men, many others. And I know this from first-hand experience because I've had Christian actors who have told me that producers would have given them a job if they would have acquiesced to a homosexual act and thus and so. There's just a lot of it running around. But it's accepted in these circles. It's considered normal. So they kind of gravitate many times to these kind of jobs because they can be accepted. All right? That's all I want to say about that. Let me stop a moment and see if there are any questions on this area, and then we'll move in. Yes, ma'am?
Have you read Dr. J. Vernon McGee's sermon in print, The Best Love?
No, I haven't.
That is a truly good sermon that will hold their interest, and it has the truth of God presented. And if a person knew that they were going to post to a person that had a problem and ask them, which in that intent, and I believe that probably the reason I can just send them
in. All right.
And when you mentioned that drug intent, I wouldn't afford any wrong in any way about the girl. that Jesus interviewed on one of the television programs. And from the interview that was presented, she had been born physically reborn.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you let me comment on that, because I was going to do that anyway, and your question just brought it up, and I can deal with what about the transsexual? No, it was not legal for them. No, it was not legal for them to do so at the time. She went to Europe or to Sweden, that's right. No, the surgery was illegal at that time, and the only people who were doing it were in Sweden. Now, that's changed. Let me say this, the UCLA is pioneering in America in dealing with the transsexual phenomenon. Now, I can't spell vestai, I'd put it up there. Would you let me do this just a moment, ma'am? Excuse me. The transsexual, quite obviously, you know what that means. That's changing sex. But there is also what is known as the spell vestai for me. V-I-S-T-I. Is there an N? V-E-S-T-I-T-E. Transvestai. And the vesta has to do with clothing, you see. And this is a male who will dress up like a girl, or a girl who will dress up like a male. This type thing. Now, by the way, you see this. You can see it almost any night of the week down on Hollywood Boulevard and other places of Los Angeles. I never forget the first time that I went down that street and I saw this. I never had anything blow my mind quite like this. And I, for one, did not know what to think of it theologically. When I got into transsexual, I remember as a boy reading about Christine Jorgensen, never dreaming that I would ever be involved in dealing with a problem like that. I thought she was the only one in history who had ever done anything like that. And we had a young man in our church, a songwriter, musician, came to our church from a strong Baptist home in Texas, came to Hollywood to make a career in songwriting, prayed to receive Christ. He was not a Christian. He'd been baptized, but didn't know the Lord. Came to our church. He'd gotten married right out of high school. Now, let me just share with you some of the details of this case history, because I think they're very interesting. He had sex one time in his life with his girlfriend, and she got pregnant. Now, that's not a very good... Well, just very unlucky, I guess. But they got married, and he never had sex with her again. And had a little child, and when I met them, the child was about 2 years old. He'd been married a couple of years. Came out to our church and had been having all kinds of emotional problems about his sexual identity. He did not share these with me at the time, but he prayed to receive Christ into his life. And one day I got a telephone call in my office. A very high, effeminate voice, sound like any girl I've ever heard, said, "This is Danny, and can I talk to you?" And I said, "Danny who?" And he told me the last name, and I said, "Well, why are you talking that way?" He said, "I need to talk to you." He said, "I'm up at the Shell station." So I went a block away up on, we were at that Shell station near the telephone booth, right across from the Whiskey Go-Go. And I drove up there, and out of this telephone booth is Danny dressed up like a girl. And I'm telling you, I freaked. Now, I'm hard to shock, but that shocked me. And there Danny was with a wig on and his legs shaved and high heel shoes and a size 10 shoe on in high heels, and I confess to you, my first reaction was just absolute rage at this, what in the world are you doing? And to shorten this story, Danny told me that all his life, since he was an infant, he had had a female mentality, had always thought like a girl, had always wanted to play dolls in the house rather than to play football, and that to please his parents, his daddy had tried to be athletic and many other things. And for the longest time, he thought he was homosexual. But that always abhorred him. The homosexual lifestyle was extremely offensive to him. And he had always been attracted to guys, but not in that kind of a way. And he just really didn't know what to think of himself. And he went through a terrible identity crisis. And my reaction was, at first, he wanted me to take him to the UCLA hospital. He was on the verge of a mental breakdown. And he said that he'd been doing some reading, that they had been into this area. And so I took him to the hospital. And I said, I just think what you need to do is repent and get your life right. And he said to me, he said, I have. I've prayed about this. And I believe God wants me to have an operation. And I just hit the ceiling. And he said, the reason I called you, he says, I hoped you would understand, because there's no one I can talk to about this. And he said, you just seem like the kind of person who would understand because of your work with other people's problems. And so I just finally said, well, Danny, he says, call me Denise. And I said, I'll be honest, I don't know what to think. I said, what can I read? You tell me, well, how can I get some knowledge on this? So he went to the hospital and checked in there for a couple of days, and I just did a crash course and some reading. I called some doctors at UCLA. And, again, I don't know what you think about this, but the medical fraternity now has said and now feels that sometimes nature, and that's the term they use, plays a cruel, cruel trick on some people. There is what is known as the hormone imbalance. Now, I think you'd have to check my figures on this because I'm just talking off the top of my head. But that the normal hormone distribution in a male or a female is like 60-40. Like the male has like 60% male hormones, 40% female hormones. It may be 70-30. It's somewhere right along in that ratio. But occasionally nature makes a cruel mistake where it'll be like 50-50. Or it'll be like 65-45 or something to this effect. And there are people who are born with a male body, but that there'll be a terrible hormone imbalance. And this consequently causes all kinds of problems, and the medical fraternity now says that this ought to be cured by surgery just like any other problem, just like any other abnormality that could be cured through surgery, like brain tumor or anything else, and that it's not in the category of a homosexual that has emotional, environmental backgrounds and causes and thus and so, but that it ought to be corrected. And so consequently, I read this, and I read the life of Christine Jorgensen, and of course she was the first known case of this, and all the ostracization, is that the word, that she went through. And eventually this girl went through the change. And under surgery, she underwent one operation in Mexico. She worked as a singer in a nightclub. And the hell she has gone through is absolutely unbelievable. She didn't have the money to get the complete surgery, so she got half the surgery, and then she went back and got some more surgery. You got external surgery, and then you get internal surgery. And I don't want to get into that because this is a mixed audience, and it's all kind of a hairy thing anyway to try to figure out what all they actually do. I think we'd have to talk to a surgeon to know, but it seems absolutely medically impossible. But it is being done, and there's a lot of research being done in this area. But she went through the change and has not made complete adjustments. And my ministry in this area was just there was nothing I could read in any college seminary textbook that I'd have read. But what I did was keep my heart open to this girl, and to my knowledge, there are only about two or three people who know about her experience. And her worst troubles were during the time when she had not had the money to get this second surgery, and she'd date boys and. Some guys she never seemed to be in the environment to date the right kind of guys. They were always wanting sex, and of course she couldn't give sex, and they'd begin to have suspicions of her, and she'd run to the hills and hide and go through all kinds of emotional trauma on her own identity. But anyway, that's not a ministry I recommend you go seeking out, but I think it's an area that theologians need to take a new look at. That's true. Okay, I've got about 5 minutes till 2. I was going to talk a little bit about the coffeehouse ministry. Should I stop and let you ask any questions about this right here, other than what she's asked? Any contribution anybody like to make to this discussion? The transvestite, by that we mean... That's transsexual. Well, to hear Denise tell it, there's a large, large number. Now, how large that number is, but she says she knows, she knew of herself right here in Los Angeles, over 100 people who were undergoing surgery. Now, this surgery is being performed here in the United States now. And she had to go to Mexico at the time. And I think, again, here again, that you talk about a hormone imbalance. This is something that is physical, not social. And the tendency is to lump all deviation into one category. And that was my tendency, that I really do not believe that was the case. Having known this girl and listening to her talk, she'd never been a boy in all her life. Had never been a boy. And had a boy's name, boy's body, boy's clothes. She'd never been a boy. And if you determine sex through mentality, or you know what I mean by mentality, a lifestyle, thinking, and thus and so. And there had always been a gentleness to her nature and all the characteristics of a female. And I don't know what I don't know how in the plan of God something like that ever happens. I haven't worked that out in my doctrine of providence. Right, that there is a difference.
If you know him better personally, going to a physician, they should go to a doctor of internal medicine or any hormone medication, because it's an extremely sensitive problem. A doctor of hormones, I don't say he is experiment, but they would tell me that I was somebody who could get hormone injections. And it causes to have a reaction to it, makes you ill, drunk, drunk.
Well, yes, and that's why this...
Right. To the surface on your skin.
Of course, she underwent months and months of hormone injections. In fact, by the time I saw this person in the booth, she had already been undergoing hormone injections for several months. I hadn't seen her in church in quite some time, and she had kind of been hiding out while she was going through this kind of a thing, under the watch care of the UCLA people. Yes, ma'am?
Have you read Wells Blowing?
No, I have not. Is it a... Three percent of the total population? Are in this category. And they don't really know what it is or understand it.
No.
Well, I think you could... I think that's an area that ought to be brought into counseling to consider this, and I did not bring that up. I think that's a good point, that at this point someone ought to sit down and talk with a person. What we might think is a demonic compulsion in reality may be a physiological problem that can be corrected.
Yeah, I can see you have to be really careful here, because you said that you first came when you were meeting with a homosexual, you first came to them with the skin part of it.
Yeah.
It's a bigger problem. There must be some other way.
Well, I think to even bring this thing as a sin problem, I think really in some areas would be to cast such so much guilt on a person that suicide would be an option for them. I think this is... I know she told me that many times she had contemplated taking her life. In fact, she called me one night, and I was not home, and referred to someone. She had overdosed on drugs, and some two young people in our church took her to the hospital and saved her life. She had tried to kill herself. That's when she was in the midst of going through this change and didn't have the money and couldn't earn a living, and it was just very difficult for her. She couldn't ask her parents for the money, and it cost several thousand dollars.
In this situation, would you suggest a medical doctor rather than a counselor?
Well, I think you had have to deal with someone who was very experienced in hormones and thus. I don't know, you know who that'd be.
No, I mean, really, along with a Christian counselor.
Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely.
Well, you would always have confidence in a Christian counselor, because when they get to them for a marriage counselor, instead of giving them Christians and instructing for prayer, it just keeps them growing to adult, and you have to be saying,
well, that's because many of them don't really know how to cope with it. Well, let's wind this. Oh, ma'am, there are many areas I don't know how to cope with. I guess I'm a trained man, but there are many areas I really do not know how to cope with. And I'm glad that God has called out men with specialized training that I can refer people to. I'm very grateful for that.